C1OB. Number 2B.
Right. We come to the next subject, spirit. Therefore, we have to see here that here, under the overall tone of spirit, we will encounter completely different objections that come up in the student's mentality, which hinder him from demonstrating Christian Science. What is here the main objection? Let's take the epitome, the main epitome. I've written here the inability to distinguish between the spiritual and the material concept would rob Christian Science of its demonstrability. So here we have another aspect. We know that spirit is the only. That spirit is that of the second day of creation, which is the firmament. The firmament is that understanding which can separate the waters above from the waters beneath. It's that understanding which can distinguish between opposites. It is that line of demarcation that can make a clear-cut line between the real and the unreal. And if we can't make that clear-cut line, then we mix up spirit and matter, the real and the unreal. We mix up opposites. So that if we don't have that understanding of spirit which can make that clear-cut distinction, we have a mixed-up universe, and in that mixed-up universe we cannot expect that there is harmony in it and that there is really the field of demonstrability of the truth. Therefore, in reading that text, we would have to see what is it that Mrs. Eddy brings out as the tone of spirit. How does the text indicate the inability to distinguish between opposites? That's the question. And if you read the text, you will see that the text is just full of it. That now she does no more talk about the mental qualities that are necessary, the mental qualities like in the first tone of mind that had all to do with investigation, clear analysis, proper investigation, using your intelligence, your reason, and so on, instead of opinions and superficial thinking. Now it is all a question, do you actually separate properly? So I first will run through the whole text before we go to the subtones and build up the subject in order to impress the thought that actually the text is speaking about spirit. So what does she bring out as distinction, as a line of demarcation? One of the very important point he brings out is that we should make a clear-cut line of demarcation between man, spiritual man, and man, material man. So that when we talk about man, we must always know, do we talk about the material concept of man, or do we talk about the spiritual idea, man? And if we don't make that clear-cut distinction, naturally we will mix up, so to say, the material man as being the man of God, and then we have lost our basis. So she brings out here that we must see the distinction between man as what? As God's idea. Man as created in God's own image. Can you see first the positive sense of man? As man as God's likeness, man as the man in divine science, the ideal man. And in contrast to that, she says, we must see the false concept of man, namely, man in matter, man that can be sinful and sick, man as the sinning race of Adam, the Adam man. That's one of her great things, that we should not confound really the true idea man with poor humanity, that under man she does not understand the Adam man, nor the sinful, sickly, mortal man, that her concept of man as idea has nothing to do with mortal man. So here we get quite a wide range of seeing that that is usually one of the great obstacles in demonstrating Christian Science, that we consider the mortal man, the material, sinful, sick man as man, because it says man has been created by God, not thinking that we are dealing there with the idea man, spiritual, in God's likeness. A further great distinction which he makes here is between really the nature of God as spirit, as the only, in contrast to the pantheistic sense of dualism. Here she brings out and said, look here, God is spirit, and God as spirit cannot be material. In no way can it be material. And therefore God can also not work through material remedies. He is spirit, and there is only one realm, spirit, and therefore spirit works only through spiritual means. This, in contrast to the dualistic sense that the student may have, that man should not serve both God and mammon at the same time, because the flesh lusts against the spirit. Can you see the difference that is being made, the line of demarcation? The flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and you make a clear line of demarcation. Because spirit is the one and only, there goes a great sense of oneness and the onlyness through the text, that there is no antagonism in being. So here she brings up that there is not more than one. It's only one thing going on, not two. There would therefore not be various methods of healing, but that there is only one, showing that therefore the one that is spiritual is the somethingness of spirit, and that the other that seems to be the opposite of it is not reality, is not the somethingness, but is a nothingness. Can you hear, and you know the synonymous term spirit, you get here a terrific sense of the first of the line of demarcation, then showing that spirit is the only, and there is no antagonism within the only. Consequently, she demands here as an answer to these objections, what? Understanding. And you have that as a quality of spirit. You know that the firmament is understanding, and so understanding is that which enables us to draw that line of demarcation. Because spirit is the only, the understanding of spirit which we have can really distinguish between the one and the only, so that there is no dualism, no antagonism. Because we can see that if we mix up matter and spirit, that we will never be able to demonstrate the spiritual. So, although the text goes that call for understanding, just here in this subject on spirit, it is a call. I just read you quickly, just only to hear that she constantly asks for understanding, that she says, that we must understand fully that truth here. To those who understand the textbook, there is no contradictory statements. One who understands the textbook can heal. To understand that error is nothing is necessary. To treat error through the understanding of truth, material beliefs must be expelled and make room for spiritual understanding. To understand that sin, sickness, and death is nothing, Christian Science proves through its understanding the nothingness of sin, sickness, and death. And you can see it's a demand for understanding. So a lack of understanding or a lack of the ability to distinguish between spirit and matter will hinder demonstration. I think this is a very clear tone too. The moment we know the synonymous terms, I think we would feel, yes, this is really the main point about spirit, because without understanding, we cannot demonstrate Christian Science. All right, let's go through the subtones and see how Mrs. Eddy builds it up. And having shown what I have said, it, I think we can easily flow through it. How does she take up the subject in the subtone of mind? We know that in mind she always lays the basis of mind. Here it is that objections to the claim that man is God's idea can be refuted on the authority of the scripture, which imply that God's likeness cannot be found in matter. This is actually a bit a long epitome. I think we just could reduce it a bit more and just say, well, the distinction begins where? Where we can make the distinction between man as idea and the concept of man as material. That's where we begin to make a distinction. Man as idea versus the material concept of man. So she asks here that Christian Science really states that man is God's idea, God's image, and that man is not to be found in matter, just as the scriptures would indicate it. Then she goes to the second subject. Once she has stated man is idea and not material, she can go to spirit, the merits and demerits. Can you see that's now the evaluation of spirit? Spirit has values, has qualities, has nature. So the merits and demerits of Christian Science should first be investigated and tested before the value of spiritual methods can be rightly judged. A great call to first investigate the merits and demerits, the value of something, before one decries it. So she asks that the merits and demerits are first investigated and tested. And only then should we judge. She says, yes, there are various methods of treating disease, but only one, can you hear, only one, spirit, huh? Only one should be presented to the world, that which has value, namely the spiritual method, namely the method of Christian Science that Jesus practiced. And that would be in consonance with the fact that God is spirit and that therefore only spiritual methods of healing are of value. She comes to the third subtone, soul. When the incongruity between God's man and Adam's race is perceived, can you hear the tone of soul, the incongruity? Because soul says, I'm identical. So the true sense is that God is identical with God's man and not with the opposite, with Adam's man. So when the incongruity between God's man and Adam's race is perceived, all apparent contradictions are resolved. So here she says there would be no contradiction in her statement about man, if that distinction would be made clearly between man and Adam. And seeing that Adam and man are not identical. Yes. She says, well, naturally, mortal mind is always contradictory. So why listen to mortal mind? It always contradicts itself. Whereas the textbook contains no such contradictions. She makes that distinction between mortal mind and the textbook and says the textbook is not written by mortal mind and therefore has no such contradictions. And there are no contradictory statements in it. But of course they are only not contradictory for those who understand it and have proven it. So she asks, make a distinction between God's man and pure humanity, between God's man and the sinning race of Adam, between the ideal man and the sinful, sickly, mortal man. And then shows that they are not congruous and therefore not identical. So I have a great sense of soul, as of spirit as soul. What happens if we go further to the subtone of principle? The epitome is the understanding of truth and of the nothingness of nothing is essential for demonstration. Now we come to the demonstration of principle and says principle can only be demonstrated on the basis of spirit, namely of the understanding of the nothingness of nothing and the somethingness of truth. We have to understand both sides of the coin. The nothingness of nothing and the allness of allness and the allness of reality. Then, if we have made that clear distinction, then principle can demonstrate itself. Again, the purity that is brought out. It says, yes, the nothingness of error is quite plain, but we have to prove the nothingness of nothing. It must be proved. Can you hear principle? And only through this, the allness of truth can be proved too. Only by proving that evil is nothing can be proved that good is all. So that we have to treat error through understanding. If we come to life as a subtone of life, the epitome reads, in the one life, there is nothing left to be cured. Here again, she brings up and says, there are not two kinds of life, God who is life and man who has a life of his own. She says, God is the infinite life, and in reality, nothing else has life. Can you see? Nothing else has. He makes a clear distinction that there is only one life, and there is next to that no other life. And therefore, nothing, she says, needs to be doctored, and nothing is left to be doctored. There is nothing, nothing, can you hear nothing? The opposite of isness. Nothing is no isness. Whereas life is the only isness there is. Therefore, in life, you have the reality, and next to life there is nothing, therefore there is no reality in sickness, sin, and death. There is nothing to be doctored or to be cured. And you have a great sense of the line of demarcation of life that says there is only one life, and therefore there is no mortal life to be cured. In truth, we have the epitome, the reality of man delivers us from so-called mortal manhood. See, now you get the separation through truth by delivering. We are separated from it through saving it, by delivering it. Mortal man, she says, is not the reality of man. Christ is the redeeming manhood. He is the light shining in the darkness. So we get here the Christ man versus mortal man and show that the Christ man frees, so to say, mortal man from himself, separates mortal man, so to say, from himself, so that only the true idea man stands out. It's always, when we come to truth, you can notice it, it's always the solution that takes place. And then in love, you have usually the perfect state, the perfect answer. Here we have as love, from the nothingness of error and matter, it follows that sickness and sin are illusions, that they really do not exist. How does she bring that out? She talks about the Christ truth that takes away sin, sickness, and death and destroys these evils and proves their nothingness. It proves the mortality, the nothingness of the mortal man, the mortality of man, and proves their nothingness. See, it is no more proving that the truth overcomes error, or that the Christ man frees man from the mortal man. Now, always when you come to love, there is nothing left to be cured. It proves their nothingness. And the nothingness of sin and sickness is beheld, then the harmonious will appear real, the inharmonious will appear unreal, and this nothingness needs not to be feared. Quite an interesting rendering. The nothingness of matter needs not to be feared. You can hear the tone of love. Usually we fear really perfection. We are really fearing perfection, because perfection says, you know, perfection is only spiritual, has no material connotation, and that we fear, because we like to hang on to the material. We don't like to be freed from the material entirely, only from uneasy matter. But we like to have matter which is sometimes beautiful, not knowing that it is always erroneous. So her final marginal heading is, all sickness is a delusion. You see, not an illusion, but a delusion. The dictionary always says delusion is just a disordered state of mind. Disordered, because spirit demands order. It demands that clear-cut distinction between the spiritual and the material, and says, without that clear-cut distinction, to see that to see the nothingness of nothing, you really can't really get anywhere. All right, let's recap it in a few words. And always when we recap it in a few words, we just begin to see the flow of it. See, here we have the second big subject. We are in some objections answered, knowing that there are objections within each one of us that need to be corrected, because these objections are all objections that try to prevent really practical Christianity, prevent our demonstration. What is it at the point of spirit? The overall tone of spirit is that there is only one spirit, that therefore is no mingling between spirit and matter. And that as long as we do not make that clear-cut distinction between the spiritual and the material, that we have no pure basis, no ordered basis from which to work, and therefore there is no necessity, no possibility of demonstrating the spiritual. So what do we have to be aware of? First of all, mind will say, you have to be aware of that man, that when we speak about man, that we mean man as an idea of God, that which God conceives as his image, and that is absolutely separate from the false concept of man as being a material man. Then you have to see a spirit, the value of this distinction, and see that only the spiritual concept has value and merits, and that the material concept is valueless, has no merits, has no value. Then as the third soul, you have to see that you don't make the material man or the spiritual idea man and the Adam man identical, that there is an incongruity between those two concepts of man, and that they never blend, they never are identical. Then principle comes and says, if you have made up to this point a nice clear-cut distinction, then the field is free for principle to demonstrate itself. And it demonstrates what? It demonstrates then actually that matter is nothing and that the spiritual is all. If that happens, then you begin to see at the point of life that actually there is only one being, one reality, and therefore there has never been left anything that needed to be healed or doctored. There is only one isness and not two isnesses, a sick isness and a healthy isness. There is only life and there is nothing besides it, that spirit, nothing besides it, therefore nothing that actually needs to be saved and doctored. And if you begin to see that, then truth begins to redeem mortal men. Then you have got the Savior. Those first five steps are then your Savior, and they begin to free you of being a mortal man and bring to you the Christ man. And when that happens, you arrive at the last tone of love, always at the climax, where you begin to see that actually the whole material universe with sin, sickness, and death has always been a nothingness and never a somethingness. And then you have reached a point where there is no more any objection, no more any obstacle in your consciousness. Then you have the onlyness of spirit, and that can be demonstrated in healing. Yes. Is that clear? Who dares to say no, huh? All right.